To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Welcome, everyone, to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction. What's up, everybody? You know that song. You know this voice. That's right. It's your boy, Rook. Joining me, as always, is the man with the plan. At least I always think he has one, no matter how much he denies it. Mr. Don Moore.
Hello, everybody. It's good to see everybody, too. Thank you for coming.
Man, it's nice. I love the interviews, but it's nice to just sit and chat sometimes, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The interviews have kind of opened up a whole new world for us. I mean,
I know, it's amazing.
As a matter of fact, you jumped from regular comics to the Kickstarter independent.
I did. And that's something we're actually going to talk about later in the show. I've got a little bit of a problem going on at the moment. But again, that's later.
I got you.
Let's start talking some comic books, man. What have you been reading?
Well, you and I have talked about this creator before, Cliff Chang. You know, you and I have talked about him in the past. Paper Girls. My daughter was reading Paper Girls. And I went back in the dollar box and found a whole bunch of issues of his New 52 Wonder Woman run with he didn't write them. He drew them.
Yes.
I went and tracked down all the single issues. I absolutely love that series. It's beyond phenomenal.
You know, it absolutely was. New 52 did some really horrible things that like the fans did not like, but it did some really awesome things, and I think Wonder Woman was one of them.
You know, when they announced the New 52 and they were showing the books, the Wonder Woman cover, it jumped out at me. Mm-hmm. The one that kind of changed her uniform a little bit. I liked the drawing, but I didn't buy them because I was thinking, well, it's just more, you know, comic. I mean, I love comics, but there's certain kinds I like, you know, yeah. And I've even been told I'm eclectic, but I don't see that. Everything, even if it's different, there's a certain way of things I like, and it just looked like a standard superhero book. I was wrong, but I'd see the covers in the store and think, oh, these are neat. I didn't realize the stories were all that special as well. The New 52, the one I was excited about, we've talked about as far as OMAC.
Yes.
I love the OMAC Jack Kirby work. It's some of my favorite. I never really read any of the other stuff. I kind of glanced at it and didn't care for it. But I bought that first issue and thought, this is greatness. They retold the story, but it was, you know, I hate to say updated, but I guess that's what it was. But I bought every one of those. I think they did 10 issues, and I could not wait to get them every month. But after I bought the first couple, I was online and found a guy reviewing the New 52. He read all the books, and he was saying, well, he was impressed with the run, but there was two books that he hated, and he says, these aren't going to make it. And one of them was OMAC. That was the first one he mentioned. And I just told you about the wide-eyed, you know, warm feeling I got, you know, and
yeah,
he absolutely hated it, which, I mean, everybody likes different things, but I love those. But anyway, the Cliff Chang, I got to be a big fan of. I bought some of his older work, you know, when I find it here and there. But there's a series, I saw it on Amazon, and I was waiting. I had it on pre-order, but it was a graphic novel. There's Catwoman, Lonely City.
Oh.
And he did everything. He wrote it, drew it, lettered it, colored it, you know, edited it.
Just stop for 1 second and look at the design of this cover. This cover is beautifully designed. You know, the silhouette of Catwoman with all the variations of Catwoman inside of it.
Yeah.
Next to a Catwoman with the cityscape behind her. Love that. That's a great design.
Oh, it's a really good design.
Actually, wait, no, this is the silhouette is her shadow on the back of the building that's behind. Yeah. Now that I'm focusing and really looking at it.
It has her cat of nine tails, you know, or whip just curling around it. Yeah, it's a neat. Anyway, I was at the comic store picking up my comics, and I went on the wall and looked, and they had it. Not the graphic novel, it was still on pre-order. Single issues.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Yeah, look at that. Was that Killer Croc sitting on a couch playing video games?
He's a main character.
Yeah. And this is all off of the... Okay, looks like we're recording again. So yeah, that's all off of the DC Black Label, which was their more quote-unquote adult schemed books. That's the line that got them in trouble with the Batwiener.
Yeah. Which I
still don't think was that offensive. You could not hardly see anything.
Every time I see the Black Label, I always remember that time we talked about it. Going back to that, I don't really understand why they did it. I mean, it looked like an afterthought. It wasn't impressive. It just seemed stupid and awkward. But anyway, that's me.
Yeah, it was like heavily shadowed and like, okay, yeah, it's there, but I'm not really sure why it needs to be.
Yeah, it didn't have any reason. I mean, people could talk about Watchmen, you know, Dr. Manhattan, but it made sense. The guy didn't wear clothes because he saw they were unnecessary. And
right. Totally believable, totally reasonable.
Yeah, but this one, the drawing didn't even look like it went for the same artist. You know, it was just, it looked like if Batman was standing in front of a wall, somebody had a piece of chalk on a wet wall and kind of wrote something out and then walked away giggling. You know what I mean?
It's one of those old magazine, can you finish this picture? And you might be an artist. Come to art school.
Yeah, and somebody in middle school is just starting to feel hormones decided to draw that in because that's what we did.
Oh my God, I kind of want to make a page where it's just like Batman standing there and like his groin region blanked out so that people can draw it themselves.
If you're gonna do this issue, you're gonna have to do the entire print run. Get busy, pal.
Anyway.
All right, well, back to Catwoman, Lonely City. I bought three issues there. It's a four-issue thing. I said, well, you don't have this other issue? They have another store in Tampa. And so they checked to see how they have one. Get this. We never had it at our store in St. Petersburg. And I was told, the owner said that nobody was buying it. Yeah. So, you know, I said, what issue are you missing? I told them, and I guess they had to order another one. I'm like, nobody's buying it. I was happy. I was doing a dance. I was acting like Steve Martin when he was being silly. You know, so I read three of the issues. I think I was missing the third one. And storytelling is terrific because, you know, maybe I was missing the second one. Anyway, I was missing something, but I picked it up and read it. Basically, the story starts out, it's a big disaster. Catwoman is an ally of Batman's, you know, which I guess she's been off and on for a long time. When I was a kid, she was always evil. But
didn't he eventually, isn't Batman married now in the books to Catwoman?
I don't know. I know in the late 70s, you remember the character Huntress?
Of course.
She was the Earth 2, daughter of the Earth 2 Batman. We're Earth 1. Earth 2 was the Golden Age heroes, which never made sense why they weren't Earth 1, but nevertheless.
Right.
But anyway, in Earth 2, Batman and Catwoman fell in love, and she reformed. And then they had a baby, and then they were both murdered. And the baby grew up to be Huntress. you know, which is basically avenging her parents' death. And which actually wasn't a bad character. And there was even times where she would come to Earth One. Yeah, it always had that JLA satellite transporter. And she'd spend the holidays with Batman. So some of those stories really got you. I liked the character. Anyway, back then, you know, what, 1978, Batman and Catwoman married, but that was an alternate Earth. But I'm, you know, in the animated series, they were, well, she was a thief. And he was always trading her out, but they had a relationship. But anyway, in this one, I guess she was helping. Some big disaster happened because of the Joker. And basically, not trying to be silly, she ended up being the cat holding the bag. Mm-hmm. Everybody died but her.
No.
And so they blamed her, saying she was the one behind it. Batman was gone, you know, Robin, all of them. And I think even the commissioner. And so she was sent to prison. And so she was in prison, I think, for 10 years and then released. And of course, she still had the penthouse, of course. Oh, by this time, Harvey Dent is the mayor of Gotham.
Oh, of course.
He's reformed. You know, he's no longer Two-Face, even though he has it. But people like the town, you know, the city, because it's really, it's like Disney World. It's controlled. And the whole area that she lived in, it basically is where Batman and all this stuff happened, is cordoned off and off limits to everybody else. Harvey Dent is using Batman's technology. All the policemen are wearing robo bat suits, you know, which is really scary looking.
Yeah.
And they, it's a, in some ways it's a fascist society, but I guess it depends. For regular people, it's a nice place, you know, up to a point. But because she's Catwoman, she's able to get past them and get up to the penthouse. And then she runs into Killer Croc. And so she basically sets up a team. Edward Nygma, who was the Riddler, he has a daughter who she's training. It was interesting. And it wasn't what I was thinking. And you're also seeing Selina Kyle dealing with the fact that she's 10 years older.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rook and I, we both trained in martial arts. And, you know, just once you hit 22, things start to change a little bit. And then, I mean, you can still do it. It's just, it's different. Like, when you throw a sidekick, I could throw a sidekick high when I was in my early 30s.
Oh, yeah.
But once I threw it, I had to, you know, chamber it back. But I'd watch some of the other people I trained with in the school, and they could chamber, throw the sidekick as high, you know, as high as they could, and hold it, you know, for a few seconds, and then chamber back and do it. I couldn't. I could extend it, kick, and then I had to pull it back. So when we're not training the school, I'm on my own. I'm just working on it constantly. Same thing. I could get it up above my head. And then my foot would fall about a foot and a half down, and I'd hold it, and then I'd chamber it back. And I just kept doing it over and over and over again. And at one point, my instructor walked by, and he just saw the side of his eye, and he said, "What are you doing?" And I says, "I'm trying to improve my kick, my side kick." And he says, "Don, your side kick is good. Everything you do is good." You know, and I said, "Well," I says, "why can't I?" And I says, "I can't hold it up in the air." And I says, "Why would you want to do that?" I says, "Well, you can't do that." I says, "Yeah, well, I see Jay, I see Christina, I see Billy, I see Robin. They're all." When I said that, he realized he kind of had a warm smile, and he goes, "Don, you can't do that. You're too old." What? Man, I was like 32. And in saying this, all these other people were in high school, you know, or nearing college. And I watched one of them I just mentioned. When he hit 22, he couldn't do it anymore either. And then Christina, I saw the same thing happen to her. When she hit 22, That's a minor thing, but anyway, if you're jumping around skyscrapers and swinging around and fighting all kinds of armed guards and superhero-powered people, 10 years, I guess, that's a rough time.
Yeah.
She's still doing it, but Bruce Wayne had the Batcave set up with all these protections.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a key, I guess there's a code. Harvey Dent's been trying to get it. The Batcave is off limits because he didn't want anybody to get hold of that technology.
Of course not.
So they're trying to do a heist with all these people, Killer Croc, Edward Nigma, a bunch of people. And I'm trying to get into the Batcave. I'm not going to tell anymore, but I tell you, I love the format. I wish there was a lot of comic series I liked in this same format. You know, square bound and this big. And the story was special. And I felt like I was a kid reading old Justice League comics. You know, that's the feeling I got.
Nice.
The only time... There's one other time, being an adult, I felt this way. Do you remember DC did that four-issue miniseries called Cosmic Odyssey? Mike Mignola did it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was written by Jim Starlin, drawn by Mike Mignola, and the inker, I can't remember his name. It's a Spanish name. Anyway, it'll be on the blog. I remember seeing that at the store, and I thought, well, it's kind of neat. I saw an advertisement in one of the DC comics. But my buddy Brett was talking to me on the phone one time. He says, what do you think of Mike Mignola? I says, yeah, I like him. I like the stuff he's seen. He's good. And then Brett mentioned, you know, Cosmic Odyssey. So I bought it, and it's, I guess DC every summer had to do another event after Crisis on Infinite Earths. And so that was their event. It wasn't, you know, it was just a four-issue series, but everybody was in it. You know, the New Gods were in it. The Justice League was in it. You know, basically everyone under the sun was in it. And it was just neat. It covered, you know, Darkseid was trying to get the anti-life equation. He set something up. Jack Kirby's The Demon was in it, but everything made sense. And Mike Mignola, the way he drew it, when you went to Thanagar, where Hawkman's from, they were all Hawkman people, but they were all a little bit different. And they were all tribal. I just absolutely loved it. I couldn't wait every month to get the next issue. And I remember I was telling everybody that had any inkling of comic, man, this is great. You got to read this. I kept trying to draw the panels and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this one, I have the same reaction to it. It's just, it makes you warm and fuzzy, and you want everybody should have it, even though the store said nobody bought it.
Well, which I just can't understand. I mean, like, the Black Label books were so well done. I mean, you know, like you said, their size is a little different. The binding's a little different. But I really thought they were well-done books.
Yeah. Well, this one is.
Oh, I know.
Well, also, it may be the area. Because I know things I like don't sell well here. But, you know, other places I live, California, Texas, Oklahoma, those books would sell quite well. And they're always surprised that, you know, you can't find them around here. But whenever I ask for certain books, you know, they get them, and they say, oh, I'll get another for the store. Those things sit there forever, you know, and I may end up seeing them in a dollar box. But to me, they're prized possessions. I'm happy to get them. So I don't know. In saying that, I do think the Black Label books were great looking, but this is the only one I ever wanted to get. You know, I mean,
yeah,
you know, so
hey.
there was another book. I saw it online and I told the store I wanted it. And I said, OK. And then I never got it. I kept coming in. I was at the store one time and there was another guy I never met. And when I asked, the lady at the store said, oh, yeah, he was asking for it, too. And And it's The Avengers, War Across Time.
Oh, man.
And it's drawn by Alan Davis, which is why I wanted it. And it's written by Paul Levitz, who was from DC and has never written any Marvel comic. Paul Levitz, you know, I've read some of his stories. He's, you know, not, if I like the artist, I'll buy it. But, you know, he was never a writer I followed. But it's about Kane. But this first issue is thick. And when we were both asking for it, they called the owner. The owner didn't think anybody would be interested in it, so he didn't order them. So I said, well, could you get them for us? And so he, you know, they added them to it, and I've gotten them. And nobody is interested.
Well, I mean, you know, I hate to say this, but you keep telling the same stories over and over again, you're gonna lose your audience.
You know, yeah, and you are correct. I've said this in the show several times. When I was in high school and George Perez was drawing Fantastic Four, to me, that was something special. And I was really happy about it. I loved it. And I was telling my friend, who was a massive Fantastic Four, we both grew up on the Saturday morning cartoon. We both had some of the Jack Kirby issues of Fantastic Four. And when I was telling him about it, you know, this time we're in high school, in early high school. And when I was telling him, he was just kind of half listening. And he finally said, well, that's the problem. He said, that's already happened before. They just keep, they ran out of stories. They just keep telling the same thing over and over. Saying that, he started getting into the underground comics, which, you know, I wasn't allowed to touch. And, but, you know, he basically, at 14 years old, stopped reading mainstream comics, where I've never stopped. Mine is the creator. Like I said, Alan Davis. If he draws it, I like to see it. This first issue, it was more pages, and I really enjoyed it. The second issue I got, you know, I mean, I love Alan Davis, but it didn't really do much for me. You know, saying that, I'm kind of hoping they'll have it at the store tomorrow when I go there. You know, I do like it. But yeah, I do think, well, when Jack Kirby left Marvel, there was a mandate Stan Lee put down, and it's the illusion of change. You know, when Jack Kirby was running those books, anything could happen.
Yeah.
And when he left, basically they were trying to keep the house that Jack built going. So I said, you can change something. You know, Ben Graham could lose his superpowers. You know, somebody could die. But then it resets itself after so many issues, and it goes back the way it always has been. And yeah, that's correct. It's they're trying to protect trademarks. I mean, that's basically what it is. And whereas Rook is, he's left the Matrix, and I took the blue pill. You know, I'm still there. I'm happy.
I'd still be happy too if I actually got to see some real change and difference happening in the books, but I just don't see that. That's my problem. It feels, and this is no slight against anybody that's working in the industry on these levels, but it's the same characters, the same stories, the same consequences that all get undone on the next run, you know. Yeah. So it's a little tiresome, you know, and that's why I love indie comics, because the people working on it, that are producing it, that are the artists, the writers, the people who package the boxes and send it to you, these are the people in charge of it. These are the guys and the guys and the people, the individuals who are actually doing the work, you know. And I think that says a lot, not just in the quality but the content as well. So
right.
You know, just my
saying that, I do feel the way you do. Most of the comics I read, you know, I mean, and these are old comics, but Usagi Jimbo, Gru, when it comes out, Love and Rockets, those are the ones I always get. When mainstream comics came out, if it's Cliff Chang did it, you know, Alan Davis, you know, which isn't a lot, I'll snag those. But
yeah,
again, it's because of the creator. I've been reading Danger Street at Tom King. I like the artist, and it's fun. I've read three issues of it. It's from that first issue, the series of first issue specials DC did. I guess they did 13 of them, and some of them are some of my favorite comics. Most of them were, fourth rate at best to me.
Yeah.
But it's fun to read a miniseries that ties it all together, and I find I really enjoy it. So, I mean, there's some things that are fun, but, it's...
Oh, don't get me wrong. It's not all bad. I'm not saying it's all bad. It's a matter of taste at the moment. Think about it this way. If you're used to eating pork chop and potatoes every single night for 3 months, and then somebody puts street tacos in front of you, or, some kind of crazy concoction out of some food truck that is just like mind blowing.
Yeah.
You're going to start like seeking out all the food trucks, right. You're going to start checking out the different street taco vendors, and that's what I'm doing right now. I'm playing in a different sandbox, but it's still the same sand,
yeah.
Which kind of brings me over to the issue I'm having at the moment. Doing the Kickstarter stuff, I'm ending up with a lot of digital comic books,
mm-hmm.
which is really strange for me to say because, I railed against them for so long. Mm-hmm. But now I'm sitting on, 19 gigs of comic books right now.
Yeah.
And that's not everything. I know that's not everything. I'm actually in the process of consolidating stuff, double checking myself, making sure that I didn't leave something behind on an old phone or a tablet or, stuff like that. So the collection is growing constantly. Here's my problem that I'm having right now is how do you organize this? How do you organize digital comic books? At the moment, all I'm doing is just taking, let's say, for example, right at the top of this list is Bigfoot Knows Karate. Any copies of Bigfoot Knows Karate go in that folder. But the problem is that I've got other stuff in there. I've got, Bigfoot Knows Karate, and then I've got Masters of the Obvious. Going down the line, I've got things like, Oneshi Press. Oneshi has a bunch of different stuff that I've gotten digitally. And, just in Oneshi Press, there's just all the different things I've got from them. Rancidville, fulfilled digitally. I've got those in their own folder. My biggest problem I have right now, this is so stupid, but Megaton number 4 and 5, the digital indie bundle dropped today. Okay. So this is a ton of indie books. I mean, there's at least 2 to 3 in each one of these folders. And there's 13 folders in here.
Yeah.
I've got a ton of these. I'm not going to leave them in the Megaton digital indie bundle folder. I'm going to take them out of there. But is that the best way, do you think? Like, I'm looking for advice here, people. Hop on the boards and talk to me for a minute. How are you guys out there organizing your digital comics? Is it just the easiest way to do it, just by the name of the book and keeping all the different issues in that one folder, like Bigfoot Knows Karate 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 through however many I'm going to end up with? Is that the best way? Or does somebody else have a better way of organizing digital comics? I'd love to know this.
How do you organize your normal comics, your printed comics?
Alphabetical, you know.
Alphabetical.
Yeah, so this is kind of like a digital version of that. It's like, okay, Bigfoot Knows Karate and bup, 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 bup. You know, Bigfoot Knows Karate is all in one folder. Frankenstein the Unconquerable, all in one folder. Path of the Pale Rider, you know, these are just the books that I'm staring at this moment.
Yeah.
You know, Decay, I've got three issues of Decay. Yeah, he's kicking issue 4 and 5 right now. Anybody who doesn't remember, Decay issue 1 and 2, that came off of the conversation we had with for Intrusive Thoughts.
So, yeah.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Stokes, Anthony Stokes is just an awesome, awesome creator.
Yes.
Very, very cool stuff. So, like I said, I've got Decay 1 through 3 in that folder. So 4 and 5 will go in there. But again, I ask people, how are you organizing stuff? Are you organizing it by the writer? Are you organizing it by the name of the book? Do you have some amazing freaking program that does it for you? Because that would be cool. I'd love to know that.
On digital comics, are you able to read the digital comics using the same application? Or do you have to go to different applications to read them?
Pretty much all of them are PDFs. So you just need a PDF viewer of some kind to work with. And that's another part of my problem is that, like, you know, through the course of the day, you might message me about, hey, this creator would like to come and chat with us.
Yeah.
Here's a sample of the book. And then later they'll send us a whole copy, or I'll go and fund it. And or we get chatting on here and they'll email us a full copy of their book. You know, cool stuff like that. I've got all these different things floating around on tablets, on this computer, on my phone. I found one on I'm in the process of transferring things to this new tablet, so I'm trying to get everything off of that onto this. It's a file management nightmare over here at the moment. So I'd love if people could hop on and give me some advice. What is your file management techniques for your digital comics? Okay. Come at me, everybody.
Here's one. You know, I don't use Comixology anymore, but I bought some of them. And it's not because I was mad at them. It's just that for some bizarre reason, after Amazon bought them and transferred them over, it's hard to get into the application now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had a bunch of free comics from them, and I did buy some when they had sale. Welcome to my insanity. I got 3 different versions of the Inkle in print, and I had to buy it online. And
oh my God,
as Rook will laugh about, I have all the single softcover albums of Valerian,
yep,
and Laureline, which are again right up there with Inkle. And then I found out there was hardcovers, which I were not going to get. And I found out that they had the first Valerian story where he meets Laureline, which I guess they only printed once in a volume back in the late 60s, never again, and in French. I never saw it in English, which is the only language I can read and speak. And anyway, they put that in hardcover. So, okay, I'll buy that just for that one. And then I found out that some of the earlier stories, there was extra pages that they trimmed off to fit and to keep all the albums the same thickness. And, of course, there's all this extra material, you know, interviews with these guys and extra drawings and, you know, stuff I love. I bought every one of those. Well, I thought it'd be nice to have them for my iPad. And so I bought some off, you know, Comixology, which no regret. But there's another, you'll laugh at this one. There's another one called Izneo, I-Z-N-E-O.
Okay.
The reason I have it is because of Dallas's Humble Bundle. And Dallas loves Humble Bundle. He sleeps with Humble Bundle.
He cuddles the heck out of Humble Bundle.
Oh, yeah. And, as a matter of fact, when I ever see the logo, I see Dallas lovingly caressing it, you know, with little hearts above his head. But anyway, you could get 154 French graphic novels for one price for the Humble Bundle. Okay, I'll do it. Well, usually you get it and you download a whole bunch of, you know, PDF files or whatever, which is fine. But this one, I had to download the application. And it's a nice app. It reads like Comixology. It's French comics, but they were in English.
Okay.
And I found a series called Orbital, which I've seen online, but I never bothered with it. And now I haven't found them, but I'm going to get the printed copies. Fantastic series. Absolutely. I've read several of these volumes. And there's a bunch of stuff in there. I really don't like reading digital comics, and most of my digital comic reading is for the creators to come on the show, you know, preparing for the show. But anyway, I got those. Well, somebody posted that you can't download them. You can only read them through the app. And if you go to Isneon and you get it, you only have it for 3 months, and then you have to resubscribe. Well, I was kind of, what? I just paid this money for this? Well, it didn't apply to the Humble Bundle. I still got them. But they sent me out a letter that they were closing their U.S. store. What? And I guess they weren't selling enough comics to an English-speaking market, so they're only going to be in French. Well, they said you have to close out your account and then reopen one, you know, through the French store. And it said, doing that, you can still read your English-speaking English comics, but they're not going to make it. They won't make or sell anymore. It's all French only. So I'm going through like a madman trying to set this up so I can, you know. And by this time, it's long. It's been over a year. I can still read them. Mm-hmm. So whoever was complaining, you can't believe everything people complain about on the internet. But even though I did believe at that time, but. Anyway, I couldn't close it out because I don't have an account because I went through Humble Bundle. Anyway, I can still read them. It still works. Woo! But this is the kind of thing I don't like about digital comics, even though it doesn't all apply to me. Everything I whined about, it still works for me. But, you know, if your device is getting older and you don't buy a new one, all of a sudden they don't support the old application. Well, you're screwed there. You know, someday you may buy a new device, but I'm of the thinking when I buy something, I want to use it till it falls over and dies. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think most people are that way. I'm not an early adapter. I'm not somebody, even though I've been forced to be at times, but I don't have to have the latest technology. Is anybody sees me by my appearance knows that I don't keep up with things. If I weren't losing my hair, I'd still look like I did in the 70s, except I've gained 100 pounds since then. Anyway, but that's an issue. I never really thought about the storage. But since you're asking about, I'll tell you how I store my comics, how I organize them. And everybody hears this is going to run away from this show screaming, including Rook.
Oh, no.
Okay. And saying this, it works for me. It makes perfect sense to me. But when friends of mine come over and they're looking for something, they end up in a corner crying and they have their hands spastically moving around, you know. I mostly go through creators. So I go through artists, not writers, artists. So I have all my Walt Simonson comics in one box. I have all my George Perez comics, all my Jack Kirby comics in separate boxes.
Okay.
If I have creators,
I'm not running away screaming yet.
Not yet. It gets better, Rook.
Oh, geez.
And, but to some creators where I don't have enough, Steve Rude's one of them. Paul Grist is one of them. You know, I like this stuff. Darwin Cook. I love his stuff, but, you know, just there's not enough to fill a whole short box. Hernandez Brothers, you know, most of them are in black and white magazines, but they've done some regular size comics as well. So in these cases, I have them in boxes, but it's either at the time I was reading them, like the 80s, or it's a style. So I have a box with Barbarian comics, you know, the Frank Thorne Red Sonjas. the Barry Smith Conans, the John and Marie Severin Cole comics, Cole the Conqueror. I have those in the box. I have boxes. Nexus is in a box. All the Hernandez Brothers books in a box. All the Howard Chaykin's books is in the box for the 80s, even though he was started out in the 70s and has continued to go on. I always remember American Flag. So I have all those in one box. It's Times. And it just goes on from there. Some of them are just a style. A cartoony style I like, juvenile kid style. Mm-hmm. But saying that, I'll have Omaha the Cat Dancer in the cartoony juvenile box. You see what the logic? It'd be easier to explain my music collection because I've had friends wanting to record my music. And I have Peter Gabriel. I have the Phil Collins Genesis. I have Duran Duran all in one section because of the beats.
Yeah.
The drum beats.
Yeah.
I have some jazz. I have U2 in it because it was the time I was listening to it.
Wait. You have U2 in the jazz section?
I have some jazz, like Weather Report, Jazz Fusion. And for some reason, U2 and Weather Report.
Jazz section.
Huh?
U2 is in your jazz section? That's what you're telling me?
Well, I have not the straight jazz, but Jazz Fusion, a band, a group called Weather Report. They call them Jazz Fusion.
Okay.
And then I have Yes. Even though Yes is a rock band, I've had friends refer to them as Jazz Fusion. Anyway, a lot of this stuff is from the time I was listening to them, even though U2 and Yes aren't. Anyway, it works for me. And other people have gone through, how do you have this thing organized? Well, it makes perfect sense to me. All the bands, I have all their stuff in chronological order, but then I put them together in different ways, and people just get scared. So that's how I do mine, and good luck doing your electronic comics.
It makes sense to you, and it's your collection. So I understand how you've got it categorized, how you've got it laid out. For me, the easiest way to do things is alphabetical order.
Yeah.
Alphanumerical order for comic books. That's just the easiest way. That's what we're used to seeing in the shop. Oh God, can you imagine if this style of comic book is all over here. So you've got kids, you got cartoon stylized comics. And then you're ending up with like DuckTales, Uncle Scrooge, Teen Titans Go.
Yeah.
And then you end up with something really that should not belong there, like Fitz the Cat.
Yeah. Omaha the Cat Dancer.
Yeah. I mean, that in a private collection, I understand. In a public collection where people are coming in to try and look for stuff, that would be chaos, man. Chaos, I tell you.
Oh, yeah. And I would think they'd be insane if they ever organized a library the way I've organized my stuff. It works for me. I know where it is. It makes me happy. I can find it. A friend of mine came over in the 90s, and he was constantly cataloging everything he did. This is before digital computers. He was a typesetter. And when he wasn't working, he'd be typing up his book collection. He had comic books. He was typing up his comic collection, his music collection. And he was always trading mixtapes with people. And he came over to my house because he's wanting to find a bunch of deep cuts and odd stuff that he knew I had. And he was the one in tears, like, how do you organize? So I explained to him. And he's just looking like, and I guess what made him even worse, I forgot about this. I love David Bowie. I got most of David Bowie's stuff.
Nice.
But I don't have David Bowie's, and he's the only one. I don't have all of his stuff in chronological order. Like I say, I would the Who or the Queen or Yes. I have David Bowie's Scary Monsters in the Genesis, Peter Gabriel, Duran Duran pile because of the beats and the time I was listening to it. And
it's funny.
I have them sectioned in different areas. That his Let's Dance, you know, album I really liked, even though it wasn't, you know, that was the first of the not good Bowie albums, people say, but I liked it. I have that with Sade, you know, the pop jazz singer. And I can't think, there's some other ones I have in this group, and it just perplexes and mesmerizes people.
But if someone said, go find me, fill in blank, you could walk over there and just be like, yoink, here it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I know where they are. They make sense.
All that matters then, man. All that matters.
One of my daughter's boyfriends came over, and he was wanting to, you know, get some songs. Him and the two of them, when they were living in South Carolina, were going to all the used record stores, finding used CDs, you know, cheap ones, and putting things together. So he couldn't find anything. He wasn't crying, but he's like, well, Holly said you had, oh yeah, over here. Oh, well, it didn't make sense. And again, I explained to him why I had them in that. Oh, okay. And I said, anything else you're looking for, let me know. Which, you know, if I was there, I would just want to dig through stuff and see what I want. I don't want somebody walking me through everything. But yet, that's what I had this guy doing. It makes sense to me. I can't see putting Thompson Twins by U2, but I can't see putting U2 by Weather Report.
Go figure, man.
Yeah.
But like I said, as long as everything works for you, then you know what? That's all that matters.
All right, that's a good point. Why don't we stop and have a music break?
Sounds good to me. Let's do that.
Thank you. You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Joe Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
Hey guys, this is Dallas the producer. That was my band Dungeon Boss, and the album is called Realized Relics. We just released it on all streaming services. You can find it on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, YouTube, whatever. If you liked it, check it out. It's just a collection of a lot of our older music. And now, back to the boys.
And thank you, Dallas. And Rook has something else to say.
Oh, yes. So that song that you just heard was definitely not artificially intelligently designed. And let me just say, we had a recent submission for somebody that wanted to, I don't know what they really wanted, if they just wanted to have us talk about it or if they wanted to come on the show, but I'm going to take a bit of a stance right now. This is not the show to bring your AI art or writing to. I respect this medium so much. I love comics. I love everything about comics, the creative process that everybody goes through. The struggling with, you know, does this line look right? Does this shading look right? Does this color look right? Am I wording this enough? Am I describing enough? Is the art showing off enough emotion? And I looked over the pieces, and because it was multiple pieces that were sent to us in regards to artificial intelligence art, this AI art movement. I think I've talked about this before, haven't I, Don?
Yeah, with I forgot Peter. When Peter was on the show, he mentioned AR.
Yeah, but I'm just gonna say, for anybody who's out there listening, this is a hard, fast stance for me. We're not interested in your AI comic books. Go steal somebody else's art and try and post it on a wall in a museum. See how far that gets you. I'm not interested in AI art. I'm not interested in anything to do with people who type in to a box, I would like a guy that looks like this, and then have like 50 images show up and you pick and choose between it. You know, yeah, you might take Photoshop and cut out that character and put him into a scene. You still didn't draw the character. Okay. So let's stop pretending that there's such a thing as AI artists, because there's not. I think that's about the end of my rant.
I get you. just to clarify, the magazine he's talking about, it wasn't submitted. They didn't ask to come on the show. I think they're just trying to bring awareness of it, and we get that sometimes. You know, somebody just sent us something about there's a book here, and I think they're just trying to get the word out.
Yeah. Well, word is no.
AI art, we talked about this. Peter was talking about, because he was in IT, and he was saying that he doesn't see that as any threat. Saying this, a lot of artists that I love, that I follow on Facebook, these aren't artists I knew except for Facebook, but they worked in animation, they worked on movies, like, you know, I guess Matrix and some other things. And some of them have done comic books, which I have bought and like quite well. But they're actually idea guys. You know, they design, you know, they come up with concepts and alien designs, dinosaur designs. And I think they're concerned. Here's an example when I'm saying this. It doesn't matter what the work looks like. A lot of times, people with the money, all they're looking at is the bottom line. And in the 90s, a good friend of mine and his wife had a graphics business. They were the first two people I ever knew that had a Macintosh and, you know, did graphics down in downtown St. Pete.
Yep.
And I was making a joke when I started doing them on the side. And I've never worked for myself. I've always worked for somebody else. And, you know, I was fine with that. But I was making a joke. Somebody said, well, Don's going to take all your clients and undercut your prices. and you know, which I would never do in a million years. But my friend was laughing about it, so we'll be careful with that. And later he told me a story, well, a couple stories, but the one I'm going to relay. One of his wife's clients was I guess it was a private school. And she basically put together their directory. It was a directory yearbook thing, you know, for all the people in the school. And, you know, she put the whole thing together, got a, you know, a moderate price for it, but it was one of her main clients. And sometime in the mid-90s, one of the parents got a computer, and they said, they'll do it. And so the school said, we no longer require it. You know, they're going to, one of the parents is going to do it. Okay. Well, the year went by, they didn't get a yearbook, you know, and it said the parent was trying to configure the computer to do it. She thought she just had it figured out. And I said, well, if they come rushing back to your wife, trying to get her to put it out at the last minute. And he said, no, they haven't bothered. And I was kind of scratching my head like, this is insane. He goes, well, you don't understand. It's not if the work is good. All they're looking at is the cost and free compared to whatever they paid. And I thought, yeah, and that's absolutely how business works. So I could see where, why are we paying this concept artist, you know, however much they're paying, and we can just use the computer and tell a couple of things we want. Well, saying that, and we did talk about this in the episode, I've seen some examples. There was, I think it was the movie Metropolis. If Blade Runner and Metropolis was done, or if, what was the guy that did Alien?
Ridley Scott.
Yeah, Ridley Scott. It was the guy that did Metropolis, Fritz Lieber. If Fritz Lieber had done Blade Runner.
And, yeah, I saw those images as well.
Yeah, and those were neat. I mean, and
interesting. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. I was surprised thinking, why haven't I ever seen this movie? Well, then you realize, and I've seen, that's the better example. And we posted that on the blog when Peter came and talked to us. But I don't know. I agree with what he says. It'll just be an oddity, like a set of postcards. It's not. There was an image comic where they couldn't get something copywritten because the creator used AI.
Yep.
And I do agree with Rook on this, that it's stealing other people's work. It's a cut and paste. What I do see in the future, I see this as just becoming another tool for creative people. I do think the people with the money are going to try to abuse it. Maybe we could just use this. But, you know, Bill Watterson, who does Calvin Hobbes, which is a comic strip that I adore. It's one of my very favorite things. And they were interviewing him, and they were talking about all the memes you see Calvin Hobbes. And how many people have seen a vinyl sticker of Calvin peeing on a car logo or a sports team?
Right.
And he said, well, and some people take some of the dance moves that they did in the comic strip and they animate them as a GIF. It's kind of fun when you see it for a minute. And he said, well, to him, he said, that's not really creativity. That's just cut and paste.
Yeah.
People are just cut and paste. What's Jim saying that? How many people have memes of? I keep seeing that meme of Leonardo DiCaprio laughing from some movie he did, and they always have something posted about whatever current events are, and they're all laughing about it. You keep seeing the same thing over and over, but yet people love that stuff and keep posting it over and over. But I do see it eventually as a tool that maybe creative people might use just to get an idea of something and then draw it on their own. But
where I take issue is where people doing this stuff tell me, try and present themselves as a true artistic individual. Like, this is my creation from start to finish. No, it's not. That's where my issue comes in. I cannot take I don't know if I've ever told this story. This is a horrible, horrible story. We really crushed the dreams of this poor kid. And I felt, I honestly feel really bad. But years ago when I was doing design work, I was at a venue sitting out front with two other designers. Now, these two individuals had worked with other bands that were on the bill. And we knew each other a little bit. So we were sitting out there chopping it up. And this kid walks up. He got to be all of like 16, 17. And he's like, "Hey, yo, you're Rook." I was like, "Yeah, I am." And he's like, "Oh, I'm so-and-so's nephew." I was like, "Oh, that's cool, dude." You know, he's the nephew of somebody from the band I was there to talk to about their album cover, website, t-shirt designs, all kinds of different stuff we were getting ready to go into. And he's like, "Yeah, man." He's like, "You know, I'm making a bid for doing the album cover for my uncle's album he's working on." And I hear the guy next to me kind of go, "Huh. Hey, Rook, isn't that what you're here for?" And I went, yeah, I am. I had no idea that, you know, first off, it's in bad form to have two people bid on a job at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't invite two of the same kind of people to work that do the same kind of work to do the bid at the exact same time. Bad form. So the kid hands me a CD, and yes, this is how long ago it was. It was a CD. Do you remember the Windows Pipes screensaver?
No, I was never on Windows.
So Windows used to have the screensaver where it was just like these pipe designs that would just like populate the screen, and then they'd disappear and they'd start populating the screen again. The kid basically took what looked like a screenshot of that. He turned a couple pipes funny colors, which he may have even had on a screensaver. And then he put the name of the band over top of that. And I remember looking at it and go, "Huh, Windows Pipes." And I hand it to the guy next to me, and the guy next to me, he's much worse than me. I'm trying to behave myself at this moment. He looks at me and goes, "Wow, this is shit." Hands it to the girl next to him, who proceeds to open the CD case, take the printed piece of paper that he cut out and glued, like Elmer's glued, onto a CD. She takes that and peels it off of the CD and goes, "Wow, that would have screwed up a CD player." This poor kid's look of horror on his face as she basically peeled his entire design off the CD.
Oh.
Back in the CD case and hands it to him. And I just looked at the kid and I went, "You know they make CD stickers, right?" And he's like, "I couldn't afford any." And he walks away.
Oh.
Like, in that moment, I looked at the other two and I'm like, "Are you effing serious? This is my competition for this job?" You know, I was completely put out. I was just like, this can't be serious. Looking back at it now, I feel horrible. Because, I mean, you know, the kid was making an effort.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, with AI art, yeah, okay, you're making an effort. But are you really making art? That's the question I have. Are you really making art, or are you just really good at filling in dialogue boxes and hitting enter? You know, that's the question.
I do agree with everything you said on that.
Especially the part about me being a jerk.
Oh, no, not while I'm talking about AI. I'm sorry. Those things happen. I'm sorry for the young man that did that. But you can't take it. I've done that when I was a kid.
Yeah, I was like something.
We used to take, if you saw a page of, say, Captain America, he was in a good pose. Me and my friend, we would just draw that same pose. We draw them, but we draw the same pose over and over and make our own superheroes up out of it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that, which, you know, is fun, but you can't sit there and try to push that off for work for a band or anything. But, there are some things in AI. I posted one on Facebook, which will not be on the blog, but a friend of mine got some app, and he was sending me through a Facebook Messenger different celebrity photos, and they're singing a song. And, you know, I had one of the Queen of England, and one was Mr. Rogers with that puppet Daniel, the lion.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, one of them was Highway to Hell. And it was funny because the puppet, I think, was singing with him, or there's another one with a dog. When he posted the Mr. Rogers to me, I said, there's a special place in hell for you, buddy. You know, but there was a bunch of different celebrities he was sending me, you know, and they were singing different songs. So he sent one of my profile picture from Facebook, and I'm doing James Brown, I Feel Good.
Yeah, I saw that. That was hilarious.
It is hilarious. But one, my picture on Facebook, I'm not, I've got a grin. I'm not showing my teeth. My mouth is closed. I'm kind of grinning. I'm looking up. And it freaks me out when I see it, because it does look like I'm actually seeing, and it shows my teeth, which are not in the photo, but I mean, they do look like my teeth, but a little wider. My eyes are kind of, I always kind of squint when I'm looking, but my eyes will open up, and it is my eyes. The AI is a lot cooler than I am, because I don't have a natural rhythm. This does. It moves with the song, which I can never do. And anyway, I finally asked him, do you mind if I post this on Facebook? So I'm trying to make sure Rook knows I didn't go to the other side.
No, I know you didn't. I know you. Listen, but it has its place. It has its place when we're having fun or you're conceptualizing, you know, things like that. I can see it as a great way to break writer or artist block.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I agree.
Just typing in a bunch of stuff and hitting enter. Oh, that's cool. Oh, that gives me an idea. Boom. Then you off you go to start doing real art, you know. I can see that. Where the line in the sand is drawn for me is when you present this stuff as your original piece from start to finish, because we all know it's not. We all know that AI, these AI engines, they draw imagery from all over the web. It's not your art. And I am not going to pay you for bits and pieces of other people's art. I'm going to go find those people and pay them for their art.
I do agree with that. I think it was 1982. I was at Dallas, Texas, the convention, and Bern Hogarth, which is famous for those really bad anatomy books. And he did Tarzan. And he was on a panel with five other artists. And I didn't really understand what the panel was about, because my friend and I went to see it. And it was a bunch of guys just kind of with nothing to say, with an audience looking at them. And Bern Hogarth is one of these guys. And I mean, they were all young guys with beards, and they all had pipes except for one. And Bern Hogarth didn't have one. But at one point, they're all just kind of, well, does anybody want to get into the commercial art versus fine art debate? And then somebody else will say something else. Nothing's happening. And one of these guys, he just said, I just realized I'm the only one up here without a pipe, which made the other guys look really silly, you know. And then finally, at one point, Bern Hogarth starts, I guess he had enough, and he was talking to the audience, kind of pleading. Because most of the people that were at the time in the comics and going to conventions were wanting to become a comic book artist or an artist of some type. And he said, he basically implored, you know, the younger people to find your own style, develop your own work. He says, don't try to copy, you know, your favorite artist.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gave the point, he says, would you rather hire Boris? Or would you want to hire Frazetta? Well, you know, saying this, Boris was good. You know, Frazetta was Frazetta. I mean, you know, saying that, a lot of comic artists that I loved were trying to be like somebody else. John Byrne, most everybody was trying to draw like Neil Adams. You look at John Byrne, you never think. Mike Grill was another one. They were all trying to be like Neil Adams. None of them looked like Neil Adams. You know, you know, sometimes you can try to develop and it becomes your own thing. But cut and paste jobs, you know, I've seen some comic artists, everybody kind of, Wally Wood was, he made the comment, why draw it if you can trace it? You know, why create it if you can steal it? Well, Wally Wood was really original, and he developed a lot of stuff, and everything he did looked like his work. And Rook and I are both members of the Comic Book Swipes group and Facebook, which I really enjoy. But when that thing first started, you could see that almost everybody in the Golden Age and part of the Silver Age stole from Hal Foster, Milt Caniff, and Alex Raymond. Well, if you're going to steal from somebody, steal from the best. And they did. But, I mean, everything. Bob Kane, a lot of the panels he did with Batman were taken from one of these three strips. A lot of stuff Wally Wood took was from some of these. Some of the things Frazetta painted of Tarzan were taken from Hal Foster.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they still seem like an original piece. But, you know, a lot of comic book artists will sometimes make an homage, which I think is cool. Some of them, when you go through there, I mean, they outright stole. If you look at one single issue, you probably see 5-6 things that they outright stole from another comic and didn't really make it their own, except they just redrew the costume, you know. To me, that's AI. I do think it'll develop into something, like Rook was saying, and I've been saying, is another tool, an inspiration thing. But I don't know. One, I understand why these concept artists are really terrified, because it's taking money out of, you know, it's taking your living away.
Yeah.
You know, and cut and paste isn't as interesting as, you know, those movies Peter Jackson did, the Lord of the Rings movies. Fantastic. It had that J.R. Tolkien style, and they did hire the two, you know, what was it, John Rowe and that other guy. They did all the artwork for them, but it was still its own animal. You know, they had a lot of stuff in there that before I even saw the movie, I see pictures in the newspaper and says, I want to see this. You know, just seeing where the elves lived, just the architecture, the costumes. I just thought designs, you know, the inscriptions everywhere, absolutely beautiful. But they weren't cut and paste jobs. You know, they had a bunch of artisans come in. They designed the whole thing. There's a cheapness to cut and paste jobs, although, you know, everybody does it to some point.
Sometimes that's what the client wants.
Yeah. You know, when you're talking about a CD cover, I did a CD cover for a friend of mine, and he had specific things he wanted. So, you know, I followed him and did it. And it's not really what I wanted. But, you know, I used the colors he wanted. I used the images he wanted to cover. And sometimes you do that. And I just remember I heard some woman talking. She was trying to be diplomatic about it. She liked the music on the CD. But she was describing it to the circle of people around her. Because, well, it was good. It was nicely produced. Had an interesting cover. Well, you know, I mean, I wish it could have been better. But, I mean, I was doing what the client wanted. You know, sometimes you're kind of hamstrung to it. And I've seen back home, there was a graphic artist that I had dealt with. He was older than I was, but we both worked at the same place at different times, and we knew each other. We were friends, and he designed a new logo for the comic store using the X-Men,
mm-hmm.
and it was a neat design, and And then the guy that owned the store had a sign painted, and I thought it was phenomenal. And then at one point, the owner asked me if I would go up on the ladder with him and help him hang it up. Yeah, sure. So we hung it up, and then I painted over the, you know, where the screws went, patched it up. And then he kept mentioning the artist, you know, who, you know, was more of an older brother to me. And I was wondering why he wasn't helping, but I didn't ever ask. But he brought, well, I'm glad you're here. I didn't want him to do it. Come to find out, they got in a fight. The fight was over. The artist wanted the text. You know, the text had the name of the store and had a drop shadow. This is back in the 80s. And he wanted the text to be orange and the drop shadow to be gray, which, you know, I could kind of see that would make sense. But the store owner wanted it red with a black drop shadow because red's an eye-catching color. It's a sign. It went good with the artwork, you know. But anyway, the artist that created it was pouting about it and mad. Well, I honestly, I have to say I agreed with the store owner more because, you know, it's more eye-catching. I do like orange and gray together, but you know, it wouldn't work anyway. The graphic artist didn't speak to that guy, I think, for two years. And these guys are best of friends. I mean, I'd come into the store and they were hanging out. One time they were stoned, which I found really scary. And 2 years, you know, and that, there was no AI to blame it on. So, anyway,
too
fun. AI. But yeah, it'll be interesting. Everything's kind of new.
Yeah, you know, hey, listen, when we started this show, I was like, no digital comics. And here I am, I'm like, digital comics.
Well, that happens all the time. I had a friend of mine in the 80s very early 80s, when all the new music started coming out, Thomas Dolby, you know, all this stuff. And the people my age were stuck in the 70s, 60s and 70s. The 80s stuff, I guess they saw as a threat and they hated it. And my friend came up from Texas to visit. This is right before I went in the Navy. And he was complaining about the rock stations were starting to play new music, is what they called it. You know, it was a new wave.
Yeah.
And he said one time this radio station got a record. And the DJ saying, you know, I can't believe they're saying this is so bad. I'm going to play this for you just so you hear how bad it is. And he said he played it, and he said it was horrible. And then he said, now all the Dallas radio stations are playing it on the radio on heavy rotation. And my friend just couldn't stop lambasting it. Anyway, we're in Oklahoma driving around. It comes on the radio. And he goes, that's the song. That's the song. How bad is it? It was Thomas Dolby, She Blinded Me With Science, which I liked. And I said, I kind of like this song. Anyway, I go to boot camp, go to school, come back. I'm in a disco, and I heard them play that. It sounds, you know, disco sound systems are great. And I heard it, so that's really good. Anyway, I saw my friend before I go to my ship. And I told him, well, you may be mad at me, but I kind of like it. Oh, yeah, I do, too. He bought the album, and he bought an album of remixes. So, I mean, everybody complains about one thing when it's new and then decides they love it and can't live without it. So, you know.
I guess we're going to have to wait and see what happens.
All right. Now, here's the last section of the show, and this is Don's great embarrassment. And
Uh-oh.
I would say, you know, when I say this, one time you could say, well, maybe that's okay, but I've done this three times that I know of. I was digging through a dollar box, and I found this one issue, and I thought, okay.
Tomorrow Stories.
This is one of the ABC comics that Alan Moore did, America's Best Comics. And Tomorrow Stories is the first issue. It had Jack Be Quick, Boy Inventor by Kevin Nolan. The Killer Stalks the Innocent, Gray Shirt by Rick Veitch. Meet Mysterious Crime Fighter, The Cobweb by Belinda Gebbie. And The Televised Tribulations of the First American and U.S. Angel by Jim Bakke. I think Cobweb, you read in another series when we first started the show, you're talking, it was another one of the Alan Moore. I remember you were talking about something. But anyway, yeah. Cobweb was one of the characters in it. But anyway, I guess the foolishness is I bought this and okay, and I read it and I did enjoy it. But it seemed really familiar. And then I realized I bought the same issue out of a dollar box about 6 years ago.
That's the best, though, when you're like, oh my gosh, this looks really cool. I've got to have this. Well, and then you get home and you're like, oh crap.
Well, when I go through dollar boxes, you take chances. I mean, if something kind of catches your eye, if you see it on a rack and it's $3.99, maybe not. Sometimes you do, but most times you don't. But it's a dollar. It looks good. I like Rick Veitch. I like, you know, Kevin O'Neill. I like Alan Moore. All right, I'll try this. And I took it home, and I read it, and I enjoyed it. I'm thinking, well, okay, this is good. But I can think of something that seems kind of familiar. Because I already had it. And I've done that with another book that I... It was a DC book, and it was something we've talked about. I don't know if it's Convergence or... Multiversity, one of those two series. But it's done like a Doc Savage cover, but it has Dr. Fate, which is my favorite Golden Age DC comic character. But he's like Doc Savage. They have Black Hawk is a lady. They're all ladies, but Black Hawk's a lady. She's part of the team. The Atom, the Golden Age Atom is in it, but it's funny because it's a boy like, I don't know, like Dobie Gillis or Leave It to Beaver. He's wearing a shirt with a sweater vest, I think a tie, and he's got the blue mask. And somebody else, oh, Vandal Savage is in it. But I'd see the cover online and said, boy, that'd be really neat. I'd like to have that. Well, it was in the dollar box. Okay, I bought it. I couldn't wait. I read it. I really enjoyed it. But the whole time, I'm reading it like it's, I've never seen it before. I mean, I enjoyed it that much, but there were certain things. Wait a minute. This seems really familiar. So I'm thinking, did Rook talk about this on an episode or Dallas? You know, it's some. I already had it. I had two other issues of it. So, and I've done that a third time. So anyway, dollar boxes are fun, and you can always give the issues to your friends.
There you go, buddy. But, That's the way to do it, you know. It's like you get home and you're like, man, this is such a good book. I've been looking for this. And then you realize, oh, man, I already have this. No wonder I thought it was such a good book.
Well, there's certain things in the book. Like, well, the Adam character is a young boy, and he's very, very polite and pleasant. And it was kind of funny because – I guess it was a comic book he read, but it was some mystic that wrote it. And he basically had, I don't know, I'm kind of butchering this book, but he had so many points. If you read all these points and you'd understand. And most people don't finish it. Anyway, he went through all the points, did all the stuff, all the exercise and stuff. And he basically had super strength. And it's funny because he's just a regular kid, you know, a regular kid in a shirt and tie with this mask. Very polite, but he had powers of the mighty Atom. You know, he was strong. He could punch through walls. He could take people out. He was kind of amazing. And I kept thinking, I've read this before. You know, it's all the other stuff, the female Blackhearts, Blackhawks, Vandal Savage. I'm thinking, that was all new, but the Atom, I think I've read this before. Well, yeah, and I have two other issues of it at home. So, I mean, I enjoyed it just as much as if I never read it. It's just kind of strange how you buy some comics and they're just embedded in your memory. You know, when you see it in a dollar box, I try to get one of you guys to buy it because I love it so much. Or you just think, well, sometimes I buy it just because why not? But some comics you read, they're just embedded in your soul. You never forget them after reading them once. Yeah. And there's some books that you do enjoy. I mean, these books I'm telling you about are good books. I highly recommend. But for some strange reason, as soon as I read it, I kind of forget most of it, except some parts that nag at you when you're reading them. So if people think like me, AI might take over the world. So don't be like me. Fight the power.
Oh, man. Too funny, dude. I actually enjoy going to the dollar boxes and coming home with stuff I already have. I don't know why. It's just this weird thing. It's like you get home and you're like, all right, I got all these cool books. And then you start looking and you're like, I already have like three of these. Yeah. I think it's hilarious.
I have a stack over on the shelf of single issues and I found the dollar boxes, but some of them, they're just issues that I love so much. One's an issue of Betty and Veronica that I bought in high school. And I think that's a perfect issue. I love the cover. I loved all the stories. The artwork was second to none. And when I was in high school, I bought it. I just thought, this is something special. And I mean, I like a lot of those. But that one, that one single issue, I just thought was the greatest. I found it in a dollar box at Wilson's. And I bought it just because I may wear out the other copy. You know, I have another one. Marvel Team Up, when John Byrne and Chris Claremont were doing that, which is some of my favorite work, they did an issue of Spider-Man and Red Sonja, which is an odd mix. Incredible issue. Artwork was super. Terry Austin inked it, so it's the X-Men crew. And but that story was, they get in a fight in the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. And they fight this wizard from Red Sonja's time. It is the most brilliant comic, and I remember at the very end, being in Oklahoma reading this, I kept thinking, I've never seen a museum like this. It looked like the Hyborian age, you know, from Red Sonja and Conan. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, there's no museum this elaborate. Well, yeah, the Metropolitan Museum in New York is. I've been to it, but at the time I hadn't. But it's like you're in this ancient world. And they even had it where Spider-Man is speaking English, and they had them with little brackets around it because they were speaking an ancient language. They didn't understand Spider-Man. The wizard did, but Red Sonja and Spider-Man didn't understand each other. And finally, at the very end, they get, you know, this battle with Red Sonja and Spider-Man fighting this wizard. And then they bust a wall out of the museum, and they see New York, you know, Manhattan. And that's my favorite part of the thing, because Red Sonja's looking up in disbelief, and she goes, she was talking about all the lights, you know, she didn't understand that, and the air is so foul, it clogs my lungs, you know, I can't hardly breathe it. Says, surely this is the city of the damned. And then the wizard's like, you know, he does some curse. He goes, I couldn't have been gone that long. And then Spider-Man, you know, he starts yelling out, yeah, welcome to Manhattan and all this other, you know, how that comes. Absolutely great. I found that in the dollar box to Yancey Street. That's in the pile. But to me, that's a reader pile. You know, if somebody wants to read something, here, you got it. It's an extra reading comic. I think I have about 40 of them up there. You know, I mean, it's fun to find some of your favorite issues again because, you know, some of them I've read so many times they get ragged. Strange it is, the dollar box copies in better shape than my actual comic.
But, you know what? I've got a few of those as well.
Oh, and you should. I always say this. A worn-out comic is a happy comic. It served its purpose. They're not to be... You want to take care of your books, but if you just buy something, a bag of board it and never read it or read it once, that's sad. It's like, you know, it's like putting your wife in a glass vial and freezing her. I mean, it's just, it's not what it's for. It's not serving its purpose. So, you know, that's the thing. Digital comics, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Except when technology changes.
Well, you know. That's why I'm running all the PDFs.
There you go. All right. Well, we actually went too far again.
Oh, no.
Hey, man, this has been nice. Let's do it again.
Let's do it again next week.
Yeah, let's do it next week. Anyway, thank you, everybody, for listening. If you like to draw, we're always looking for free fake comic book covers to announce a new episode on the Facebook page and the Facebook group. I can reformat anything you do into a cover within taste. We can't pay for it. It's yours to own. And if you allow us to, we'll add it to the cover guide of the blog. A lot of people like these. If you're any kind of singer, performance artist, musician, if you can put on MP3, we'll be happy to play it just like we did Dungeon Boss today. You can go to the contact page of the blog and get it. We also have t-shirts. It's to help us with the hosting fees. We have 3 different designs. Try them out. Listen to the show. Wear the shirt. Rook?
Everybody go to bunchofdorks.com. Click on that Cyclops. Make sure you share that page on Facebook and whatever else is out there these days. Until next time, everybody.
Read
more
comics.